A potentially glorious Arsenal season hangs in the balance. Sunday's home defeat against Aston Villa means the initiative's been handed to Manchester City in the Premier League title race. And last week's 2-2 draw with Bayern means the Gunners have work to do to keep their Champions League dream alive. Bayern have suffered the indignity of watching Bayer Leverkusen take their Bundesliga title away, and their whole campaign rests on Wednesday's clash. I'm Kevin Hatchard, and this is Football Only Better. The big games get the big names, starting with Mark O'Hare. Mark, Arsenal was strangely jittery against Bayern, and they've had some disappointing and maybe naive displays in the knockout phase of this competition.
Yeah, I think that's fair and accurate. I talked up Arsenal as a 1.8 shot a week ago ahead of that first leg tie against Bayern Munich, and I found that price was perfectly palatable, really, going into that first leg. I thought we were on a good value price. And, you know, after recording on Monday until kickoff on Tuesday, the money came for Arsenal. Their price trended quite downwards, eventually going off around the 165 mark. So, you know, I was quite pleased with the market beat. But the closer we got to kickoff, the more the price narrowed and the more I thought about the game, the more I actually got concerned with my position on Arsenal. And I did try to exit it at some point, because I almost felt the odds gone a bit too far, and I'd almost reversed my position to try and get Bayern on side in some way or form, because after seeing that team sheet, the abundance of obvious quality in that Bayern Munich team, especially in forward areas, plus, as you say, that kind of last chance saloon element to their season, they'd clearly given up retaining the Bundesliga title, and now the Champions League is the only aim really for the rest of the campaign. Kind of made them a bit of a dangerous animal, really, and I guess it showed, really, because they produced one of their best performances of the season. Saying that, I did think, as you say, Arsenal contributed to it too. Defensively, the side which looked really rock solid in 2024 did look jittery at times. And the concerns that came to the fore against Porto really sort of reared their head as well. But yeah, they just looked really uneasy against the counter-attack and made some really sloppy errors. Looked genuinely uncomfortable against pace, which is a surprise because they've dealt with it pretty well so far this season. But I guess fortunately now for Arsenal, Alphonso Davies is suspended and Serge Gnabry is seemingly out through injury. So that left-hand side for Bayern has been blunted a little bit, not too much. Kingsley Coman is a very handy replacement. I do think Rafael Guerreiro is a step down, though, even if Davies hasn't been at his best this season. So, but whereas, you know, you look at Bayern and then compare with Arsenal, there probably is now an element of mental and physical fatigue coming to the party. I think we've seen that in some of their performances. They have been pretty relentless in 2024 and their schedule's been very tough. So, you know, since February, Arsenal have faced Porto twice, Liverpool, Man City, Villa on Sunday, and of course Bayern too, alongside seven other matches. So some really high profile games, as well as quite a heavy schedule too. And, you know, perhaps it's fatigue. It's difficult to sort of know what's quite gone wrong in the last week or so for Arsenal, because they have been so good this calendar year. But I did see a number of concerning aspects of that Bayern performance kind of rear its ugly head again against Aston Villa at the weekend. Again, they looked troubled by pace on the counter-attack and in transitions. Again, they gave up shot tallies they haven't really done often this season. We know Odegaard got substituted with a bit of a knock as well. He was probably their one shining light. I'm sure he'll be okay and he'll be fit to play here. But there's enough concerns for me to leave Arsenal alone here. And I think the market does agree, because they made them pretty strong favs, not just to win the first game, but to qualify too. And their prices, you know, Bayern are now, you know, down to what, 250 to win this first leg, to win this second leg, to qualify. They're now favourites too. So you can actually get them on side with a zero ball start at 182. And but the issue for me with Bayern is I just don't trust their defence still. And that Arsenal team going forward has still got the capability to put them to the sword too. So the wager that makes me feel most comfortable going into this game, again, is to kind of do a rinse and repeat from what we saw in the first leg, which is to back goals. We know Bayern are very, very rarely blanked, especially in Munich. You have to be at your absolute best to sort of deny them those opportunities. But, you know, the flip side is, can you trust them to silence Arsenal or any side for that matter? Probably not, really. So, yeah, I'm kind of just going to go over two and a half goals in both teams to score here at about 183. If we do get a first half goal or an early goal, as we got in nearly all last week's ties, this should really open up and be quite exciting and entertaining. Bayern will go for it, obviously. Arteta will probably be a bit more handbrake on, but, you know, I think with that Bayern side, you know, those goals are almost guaranteed. So I'm quite happy to take that price.
trader, tipster, and four times the champion collector of Ronnie Johnson memorabilia, Emmett O'Keefe, is with us. Emmett, this is where we find out, I guess, if Bayern still have that steel of champions, that big game swagger. And Mark mentioned some of the injuries they have. We know Gnabry's out again. Kingsley Coman limped out of the game against Köln at the weekend, so, you know, he might be out as well. But they've got Matthijs Tel, they've got Jamal Musiala, they've got Thomas Müller, who scored at the weekend. And of course, they have Harry Kane. And yes, he hit the post at the weekend, had other good chances, but he's been scoring in volume all season long.
Yeah, absolutely. I, like Mark, I find this a very hard game to call. Unfortunately, I was one of these things last week where when you kind of see the team sheets, you just think, oh no, I shouldn't have given that tip. Like, again, all Arsenal backers were not hoping to see the name Manuel Neuer in the starting 11. I think that's, to me, that was the biggest kind of difference last week, the kind of stability Neuer gave Bayern. And I think as well, from kickouts as well, I think it's kind of one of these things that isn't measured, I think, brilliantly by statistics currently. I'm sure football clubs have proprietary statistics that can measure it, but in terms of a keeper who can kind of break the press with these like 20 or 30 yard passes to get his team up the pitch, I think is incredibly valuable. And I think Neuer can do it as good, if not better than most keepers. And the kind of again, it's hard to measure by statistics, again, the kind of confidence that Neuer would give the defenders around him. So I think he certainly makes a massive difference. Like, in terms of trusting Bayern, though, to back it up, like Konrad Leimer, I thought, had probably the best game I've ever seen him play last week. I think he was screening the defence like nearly N'Golo Kante at times. I just think, like, I don't necessarily trust a kind of that to repeat itself. Like, Bayern are outside, they're kind of sixth in the Bundesliga in terms of goals conceded. So when you look at the big sample size, the Bayern defence can't be trusted as well organised and kind of as well as they played last week. I can't trust a repeat there. I also, it didn't bite them last week, but the De Ligt, Eric Dier centre half partnership is, again, I have a huge question mark attached to that in terms of a lack of pace. And I just, leaving out Kim Min Jae for Eric Dier, like, maybe Thomas Tuchel seems.
Yeah, I don't get that either. Yeah, but Upamecano's completely gone to pieces. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Another awful mistake at the weekend.
Yeah, I think as well, listeners might remember his collapse against Man City. Like, I think at the Etihad last evening, he was absolutely appalling and completely kind of lost his composure and could barely pass the ball forward. And so I think it's that I could, and after that and his performance in against Lazio, I can certainly see why he's not being picked. But I would have Kim Min-jae as one of the best six or seven centre backs in Europe. So in European football at the moment, so I think that's kind of a bit surprising. And like Mark said, I think you just will be worried with both Liverpool and Arsenal. Is the kind of intense schedule catching up to them? Like, I think, it's hard to measure exactly, but the Premier League does have more injury time than most of the leagues in Europe. There is potentially more, slightly more fatigue on the Premier League clubs as the minutes pile up as we come to the end of the season. I just thought it was noticeable yesterday in the Arsenal Aston Villa game, how the Arsenal kind of press just wasn't nearly the same, with playing with the same intensity in the second half. And Aston Villa did play well, but I felt like they couldn't get out easier. And it was a really different game in the second half in terms of Arsenal's energy levels. So I think that would definitely be a concern for me. But you could argue in that sense, though, as well, that actually playing in the counter-attack might actually suit Arsenal a little bit more, not having to force the game. And maybe if they can get into situations where they can isolate Bayern centre halves and full backs against the likes of Saka, Havertz, and Martinelli, if he plays, that actually might suit them. Like Mark said, I would lean goals. I think it's a really hard game to call from a win point of view. I think it'll be a high scoring, entertaining game. One way I might look, though, I thought, is just in terms of the card markets. Arsenal's kind of leading card getter this season is Kai Havertz. He's had it in 28. He's getting cards in 28% of his matches. And the beauty of Havertz is he can get cards in so many ways. He's such a he's a prolific fouler. I won't say the word, but I think listeners might know the word I'm talking about. Something housery, which is he's
a sugar house. He's a sugar house.
Sugar, exactly.
As you say around kids, you learn to say sugar instead of the word that you're thinking. Yeah,
definitely. definitely use Kev. Yeah, so I think he can get done for time wasting. So I think he's a good guy to have on side in these markets, especially in such a high leverage game. Like if Arsenal go ahead, he will be the man kind of throwing the ball away when Barnes trying to take a free kick. So I think I like getting him on side around 4-1. And who's a player with a similar kind of high card percentages is Matthijs de Ligt. I just think in this type of game, when it's a bit more, when Barnes are playing a bit more front foot, I can see him kind of getting drawn out and kind of and committing fouls against Arsenal in the break. So maybe Havertz and De Ligt in the card market's that kind of a big price, the way it look.
What you find is as your kids get older, you remember to say sugar a bit less and make a few more errors as things go along. Last but not least, Sky Sports' Lewis Jones joins us, still shaking his head at all of those goals, those pesky goals that we got in those first legs last week. Lewis, question for you. If Arsenal do crash out here, does that help or hinder their Premier League title chances? Obviously, your gut instinct would be that it would help because they get fewer games, but I just feel like that will be a real hammer blow from a morale perspective.
Yeah, I would agree. I think they need to find some a bit momentum quickly, don't they? After what's happened over the past week or so, and this is a really really big fixture for them, I think, and it's gonna tell us what they're really made of. We know they're a fantastic side, aren't they? But this is the moment where they really need to go and show that ability to sort of get it done in a big monster pressurized match out in Germany. So yeah. And I think that task has become more difficult now, having lost that momentum that I spoke about a moment ago, and the confidence that they probably would have lost in the process that Arteta likes to call it against Bayern. And then that Villa result yesterday was would have really shook them, I think, and everyone associated with the club. So yeah, and I've said this all season about Arsenal, really, about them just providing me with no evidence to tell me they can be trusted to play with these sort of cool and calm heads in these high stakes environments. I've sort of swum against the tide a little bit with Arsenal this season. A lot of people have been telling me that they're finally ready to make the step, and this team's very different. But I've always had that sort of itch to scratch in terms of their way that I just don't trust them in these big games. So I suppose that's why I backed Man City to beat them, and why I backed Porto to qualify against them at big odds. So I haven't actually made any money on this theory yet, but the plan is to turn that around on Wednesday, and I'm already on Bayern to qualify. So there's no need for me to really to get involved personally at the moment. So I mean, I'd say quite a good spot now that Bayern are 1.81 to qualify on the Betfair exchange, but I wouldn't put anyone off jumping on that price now. So I think Bayern will get through this tie, actually, and I think the price is okay. And even Mikel Arteta admitted after the Villa game, this is a quote of his yesterday: "We lacked a lot of composure. We rushed things with the ball," and I think that's quite. He's normally quite a guarded character, Arteta, and doesn't really let things like that slip, what he says in the dressing room out in a press conference. And I just think that just provides a bit of a guide of how they're playing in these big games at the moment, and how sort of untrustworthy they are, and they're not really staying calm when they should. They're getting the emotions are taken over in these big games again, like they've done in the past few years. And they haven't really learned from, especially that Porto game. They've just continued to do the same, continue to make the same mistakes in that regard. And I totally agree with Mark about the mental and physical fatigue, actually, of this period. I think that goes against them for Wednesday night as well. And I think I can see them offering up a similar sort of type of performance at the Allianz. I do think Bayern are in a good spot here. And I haven't watched much of Bayern this season, and it's obviously been quite chaotic following it from afar for what's going on there. But I just thought they were in their element, actually, at the Emirates, in a game where they didn't have to force the issue. Obviously, you've seen them more than me, Kev, but they just looked at ease and playing like they were quite comfortable on the counter attack, I thought. And they like unleashing Sané in the
That's where
transitional
they're very
sort of
good.
spots.
That's where they're very good. Well, in transition, the irony is transition is their greatest strength and their greatest weakness, because when a game gets stretched, they're so good. Like Musiala can do his thing. Kane is obviously able to finish everything. They've got guys like Matisse Thiel, Coman when he's fit, Gnabry when he's fit, although the latter two are almost certainly not going to be, although we'll see what happens with Coman. But defensively, they're a mess in transition. That's the big problem. It's funny, actually. I was looking at some data before the Leverkusen game to do the tactical feed commentary, and I was kind of comparing Leverkusen and Bayern. And you look at Bayern, the press is very good. The counter press, they win more kind of high regains than anybody. But when that breaks down and it doesn't happen, that's when they're in big trouble. So they ask the centre backs to do so much, and it kind of ties in with what Emmett said about Dier and De Ligt, because they're the kind of lock if the counter press doesn't work. And I just think they do take an awful risk if that press doesn't work. If you can play through that pressure, you can get at Bayern, no doubt.
Now, I suppose every week in the Bundesliga as well, they have to sort of play with Q's expectation as well. They dominate the ball, aren't they? And I don't think really that suits their style at all when they have to try and sort of unpick defences by sort of being clever with possession.
Yes.
And I just think this game just might be again where Arsenal dominate possession and Bayern can sit off a little bit, and the home fans are probably going to accept that, I think, because they know how well it worked in the first leg. So I do think they're sort of a team that strike me that could be suited to being the perceived underdog still, whether they don't have the ball and they can sort of, as you say, unleash those transitional counter-attacks that they're so good at. And so I thought Sané was absolutely amazing in that first leg. He was really in his element. So, and Bayern Munich have Harry Kane as well, don't they? And Arsenal don't. And I do think that's a big edge in this when you're sort of pricing up a game like this. And obviously he's going to be massive in those key moments in front of goal, but and hopefully he can bring his usual ruthless streak. But I do think his battle with Saliba and Gabriel actually was a fascinating watch in the first leg. It was a really sort of physical, intense matchup. And Kane doesn't shirk a challenge like that. He does like to get down and dirty with these centre backs that try to sort of ruffle him. And I'm expecting more of the same actually with Kane's sort of know-how and shrewdness up against the sort of likely pumped up Arsenal duo, shall we say, who tend to play worse the bigger the game. That's the trend at the moment, is that these two are becoming a little bit too chaotic. You don't really want that from a centre-back partnership, especially those two have been so good for so long. And I think that sort of panic and naivety can be seen by Saliba and Gabriel's performances in the knockouts, that Bayern game, and also in the Porto game. And that sort of unusual rashness to their game that can be seen through their fouls committed count. So in the three knockout games with Porto and Bayern, they made 12 fouls between them, which are sort of quite bewildering numbers, really, for centre-backs of their sort of ilk. And they all usually play with such assurance, don't they? So they're very sort of, I think they're liable to get a little bit rattled here, I think. And Saliba has made 7 of those fouls and Gabriel 5. So this means Saliba has made more fouls in those three games than he has in his last 11 Premier League games combined. And this is a player that's only averaging 0.62 fouls per 90 minutes and has made just more than 2 fouls in just 5 of his last 52 starts. So it's a very sort of an erratic, a very strange figure to make 7 fouls in 3 games in this environment. I do think it's in the environment that's making those rash decisions from Saliba. So, yeah, as I mentioned on the weekend pod about centre-backs being priced up quite what I'd call lazily by the algorithms that the bookmakers use to help with to get to that sort of
price. Looking sheepish in the corner there.
Exactly. Anywhere where an algorithm steps in, I think we can make our move. So the centre-back fouled numbers are always something which I'm really interested in, especially when a player like Harry Kane is the one they're trying to stop, because he's just a foul-winning machine, and he won 6 fouls in the first leg at the Emirates. So he's going to be to the fore again, I think. And we didn't quite land with our Zanka bet from the Brentford versus Sheffield United game at the weekend, up against Big Ben and Burnley for the Blades. The other centre-back, Nathan Collins, actually made the foul in the end, so we got the wrong centre-back. But I'm not losing confidence in this betting strategy, though. So I'll definitely be keeping an eye on the Saliba and the Gabriel foul numbers on Wednesday. There's no markets up yet, unfortunately, on Betfair, but my advice would be to take anything bigger than sort of 8-11 for Saliba to make 1 foul, and then anything around sort of 3-1 or more for him to make 2 or more. And as I sort of mentioned on the weekend pod, you can also combine the foul counts with a centre-back. So the option of combining both Saliba and Gabriel to make at least one foul through the bet builder should come out at around 6-4. And that's a bet that would have landed in the two matches against Porto and against Bayern. So I can see that landing again at an odds against price. And also, again, if we want to dream a bit and we want to put them both to win 2 or more fouls in the game up against Kane, which did land in the first leg, obviously. If you combine the two of them both to make two fouls, at least, you can get yourself an 8-1 shot there. So, yeah, I am very much in the buying camp for this one, and I'll be keeping an eye on those Saliba and Gabriel prices for fouls committed when they arrive on the Betfair site.
Now, we know that injury time goals could be a pain in the pocket if they've ruined your bets. So now you've got 90-minute payouts to rescue you if the clock hits 90 minutes and you've got the right result as it stands. Your bet wins when the match ticks into injury time. T's and C's in the description. 18+. BeGambleAware.org. Brilliant game in the Spanish capital last week. 3-3 between Real Madrid and Manchester City. Emmett, do we expect it to be as chaotic again? Obviously, Real will have a bit of a hangover from what happened last season when they went to the Etihad and got absolutely smashed.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's kind of a real tough scene for unders backers in the Champions League when you've a game with 1.4 expected goals that has six goals and one of the greatest feats of low XG finishing the European football has seen. So
it was amazing, wasn't it? Bardiol with one of the bounciest first touches you'll ever see that set him up perfectly to smash one in on his wrong foot. I mean, once that goes in, you think, right, well, this is just a carnival of chaos, isn't it?
Yeah, and like, absolutely. And the Phil Foden goals, this is lot there. He reminded me of some of the really great players in that sense that when he got the ball there, you thought it was going in. So I think that's maybe, like, as in, obviously, I think with football, it's a very random sport. It was only last season that Marcus Rashford is playing like one of the best forwards in Europe. I'm not bitter, obviously, but
giving you a week off from talking about United.
We'll see if Foden can sustain it, but at the moment he's playing at an absolutely world-class level, and he's actually, listeners might be interested to know, he's been a huge mover in the kind of Ballon d'Or market. Whereas we originally priced him up, he was kind of maybe 66-1 or something like that a few months ago, and he's now moved into around, I think it's around maybe 10 or 12-1. Obviously, he's going to be part of a team that are favourites for the Champions League, favourites of the Premier League, and obviously England will be favourites for the Euros also. For this game, I think my main angle here is, I think Real Madrid are vulnerable away from home. If you look at their La Liga performance this year, if you look at expected goals against away from home, they're fourth in La Liga, which you wouldn't expect given their kind of fairly comfortable in the lead at the top of the table. If you look at their Champions League away ties this season, when they were away at Braga, gave up 16 shots and over 1.5 expected goals. Away at Napoli, over 17 shots and over 2 expected goals. Gave up 15 shots at Leipzig, and Leipzig should have scored more than one goal.
Leipzig should have knocked them out, is the truth.
Yeah, exactly. I feel as well, the kind of the home tie at the Bernabeu was a bit like an away performance rail, when they sat back and Leipzig really stormed and kind of stormed the game and dominated if it wasn't for Openda's kind of way and Leipzig generally wayward finishing, that game could have at least gone to extra time. So and was with City, and City are just incredibly strong at home. Like, they haven't lost since kind of the game just for the World Cup break to Brentford and Ivan Toney and good Christmas 2022 in the Premier League. And it's rare you say it, but I think they're actually quite a big price to win the match. When I last looked, they were kind of around kind of 167 on the exchange, and that's not too dissimilar from the price they were playing playing Liverpool at home in the league last November. And I think Real have it to prove that they're as good as Liverpool, I would say, or as good as the market thinks they are. I think they've had an easy draw in the Champions League. They scrape past a bad Leipzig team, and City away from home is the hardest assignment in European football by far. And I think there's a live possibility, maybe not a quite repeat of last year, But I think a comfortable City win is most likely, and I wouldn't put listeners off looking at City in the kind of Asian handicap markets or even minus one on the handicap. I can see City winning fairly comfortably. Another big thing is Kyle Walker was on the bench the weekend. If Walker is back, like
That's huge.
he's the one
Yeah.
player in European football that can not nullify, but he can like make life quite difficult for Vinicius Junior. There's very few fullbacks in world football who can say that.
Yeah, Mark, that first leg is the kind of game that brings Pep Guardiola out in hives, isn't it, really? Because they just don't. Coaches like him hate that kind of chaos, don't they, really? But City actually, managed to kind of ride the wave and get a decent result. And it's interesting, Emmett's absolutely right. A trip to the Etihad is actually as tough as it gets in European football. But it's not, and Pep Guardiola's made reference to this before Manchester City fans start getting angry with me. It's not an intimidating venue in the sense that it's not like going to Anfield or going away to Galatasaray or going away to really kind of oppressive atmosphere where the fans can be used almost as a kind of weapon for the home team. It's just not like that at Manchester City, but the team is so good that that's what brings them through.
Yeah, it's not a cauldron, but in terms of footballing ability, there's no harder task in world football than going to the Etihad and getting a result. So, yeah, the first leg was brilliant, a carnival of chaos, I think you described it as, which is perfect, really. Some really high class football on show in terms of chances created. It definitely wasn't a three all, but you think of those long range strikes, the cheeky free kick from Bernardo, Madrid getting a helping hand with a couple of deflections as well. But I think the intent from both sides was clearly there to try and play their part, and it ebbed and flowed. Both teams had spells of dominance. It was just a great spectacle, really. The last season these two teams played, the first leg was a much lower key affair, and before sort of City bulldozed them at the Etihad. I don't expect, like Emmett, it to be quite so emphatic this time around, but I do favour City. Kyle Walker being available is a big plus, but having a fit and available Kevin De Bruyne as well. Both those two players were unavailable from the off. De Bruyne felt ill, so he wasn't able to start that game at the Bernabeu. So, City immediately jump up a notch if either of those two players come into the side. But yeah, I mean, as I can't really sort of add too much to what Emmett says there, but Walker's ability to sort of deal with the counters and transitions, that's one area where Madrid really targeted in the first leg. They started Rodrigo down the left, surprisingly, and he had plenty of success in those transitions, countering City down their right-hand side. And if Walker plays, that avenue probably won't be quite as fruitful. But then also from a Madrid perspective, Tchouaméni's suspension means they're going to have to play either Militao, who's not completely match fit after an injury, or Nacho, who's had a bit of a difficult time this calendar year too. So they're not exactly down to the bare bones at centre back, but I'm sure Ancelotti would have preferred either of those two potential centre halves to be in a better sort of vein of form right now. But yeah, anyway, my hunch is we'll see a similar style game, actually. I don't see why Ancelotti would overhaul his approach, considering it worked pretty well last week. Sit back, respect City in possession, only really press when they come close to the penalty area. And when possession is broken up, you just hit them with some serious threats on the counter-attack. And, by applying that methodology at the Etihad, and being successful is clearly easier said than done. But I think you look at Arsenal, who pulled off a defensive masterclass here. Chelsea had relative success doing something similar. And I even remember Everton going here and frustrating Man City for a good hour or so before Haaland scores a snapshot from a corner. So, this is I guess the flip side, this is a City side. We talked about Bayern Munich and their firepower. Man City have scored at least three goals in all nine of their Champions League games this season, which is quite incredible. It's very difficult to contain them, especially at the Etihad. However, they have only kept one clean sheet on the continent this season. If you look at the Premier League, just two clean sheets in the last seven home league matches. And I think, the flip side to City scoring is I think they still are a little bit get attable. And I think Guardiola said as much after the first leg in his post-match press conference. He said they'll have to be on guard for any
Did he use the
tactical.
word get attable in that press conference?
No, but he did say that he expects Madrid to score, which I think is quite something. you know, he'll be on guard for any sort of tactical tinkering from Ancelotti as well. But, I thought it was quite revealing that he expects Madrid to score. Maybe it's just he's playing on words there. But, my theory here is City will be too strong, even if Real Madrid come up and cause them problems too. So I was just looking at the numbers. City to win, 168 on the exchange. Both teams to score is around the same price. So the market is suggesting each wager has about a 60% implied chance of landing on Wednesday. Yet the combination of the two is quoted at 21 to 10 on the sportsbook. And if you wait until Tuesday, you'll get a bigger price on the exchange, probably closer to 325 for Man City to win and both teams to score. And that suggests the combination of the two has about a 30% chance of landing. So basically half a chance of landing, even if BTTS is 60%. It just doesn't really add up to me. If City win this, which I expect them to do so, I think Real Madrid will have their opportunities. There's too much quality in forward areas to not cause a City defence, which has looked ragged at times in transition. So, yeah, I expect probably another 3-4 goals in this game and City to come out on top.
We know Real Madrid, they're so good, and we are so get attable. Yeah, I could see him taking that on maybe going forwards. Lewis, you rightly have been on the Phil Foden train for quite some time about potentially being top scorer in the Champions League, and he's rattling along.
Yeah, it's going very nicely. Yes, it's
remind us what the price was when you got on and recommended.
Well, it's between 40 and 50 to 1 when I think it was just before the Copenhagen first leg, I think, and he scored in that one, and he was rested for the second leg, which I thought might have put the bet on the back foot. But this goal that he scored against Rao in the first leg has put us back in with a shout, I think. It's a top goal scorer market. It's always a popular one to punt on, isn't it, and follow. So I thought I'd provide a bit of a state of play, actually, to see how we're looking on the Foden situation and who's where and what on the prices. So Harry Kane's got 7 at the moment. He's leading the way. And you've got 3 on 6 goals. You've got Griezmann, Haaland and Mbappe. And then you've got Foden amongst 5 others on 5. So Alvarez for City, Galano for Porto is out of the competition. Hoyland for United is out of the competition. And Morata. So I'd be surprised if anyone else can get involved unless Vinicius Jr. goes a bit wild at the Etihad on Wednesday. So, yeah, the betting is Haaland is the 5-4 favourite, but I would reference that he hasn't scored in 3 appearances versus Real Madrid. And I thought actually the game passed him by last week. I know this is a dangerous thing to say about Haaland.
They didn't get the ball to him, did they? I mean, we had a lot of shots of Rudiger pushing him and kind of shouting at him. But actually, I do often think with him, just him being there affects the game. Like, yeah, people always say, oh, you know, he doesn't look good and his hold-up plays rubbish and blah, blah, blah. But it's just the fact that he's there and teams are so scared of him that it just ties up at least one defender. And that's what makes the space for Foden to score that wonderful goal. You know, that does make a big difference.
Absolutely. I think we could do a whole podcast about whether Erling Haaland makes Manchester City a better team or a worse team. So probably save that for another day. We did only make 2 passes in the final third, actually, in that first leg, which was the lowest he's produced this season in any game. So I do think they did an OK job getting in around him. But as you say, the space was available for other players to exploit, and Foden did that brilliantly, didn't he? So, yeah, so we're on Foden, aren't we, at 40 to 50 to 1. When the odds were a quarter for the first 4. So we're in a good spot of getting a decent payout, I think, with the sort of dead heat rules applying. He probably just needs maybe one more goal to secure that, I would say. But I do think Haaland's taken up too much of the market still, actually, here at 5-4. And considering Kane's got the goals in the bank already, and with my feeling that Bayern are going to head through against Arsenal, I do think if you want to get involved, I do think Kane's the bet, actually, at 9-4. But yeah, no, I'll just be I'll be watching back and hoping for a 100-1 Phil Foden hat trick, I think, on Wednesday. That would do nicely. And he scored two hat tricks in his last 12 starts. So it's you never know.
That would really put
a cat amongst the pigeons, wouldn't it? But I am going to just make a case for Real Madrid to qualify here, actually, at 5-2, which would be terrible for my Foden situation, obviously. But I do think at that 5-2 to qualify price, they are a bet for me here. I wasn't expecting to see that price available. So I just think there's a lazy assumption that history is going to repeat itself like it did last season, where City absolutely were phenomenal in that second leg against Real Madrid, where they absolutely took them to the cleaners. But I don't think we're seeing the same City as we did last season. I'm not sure they've hit the heights of that level of performance since that day, really. And Madrid exploited City's vulnerabilities on the counter-attack to such a dangerous level, I thought. And I always thought City were never comfortable trying to defend that front three. And I think this is why Madrid are the value across many sort of the markets, actually. And I think they're going to create so many big moments. And it comes down to this, the fast breaks and the counter-attacks that they put together. I think Pep knows how vulnerable his team are, and it's backed up by the numbers. So the fast break metric defined by Opta, which is another word for a counter-attack. I was just running some numbers this morning, and Man City this stat staggered me. They've conceded the most goals in the Premier League this season from fast breaks, so 7, more than any other team, and they've conceded the most goals from fast breaks in the Champions League as well, 5. So this equates to sort of 27% of all their goals conceded in the Premier League and the Champions League this season have come via a fast break. And what do Real Madrid how are Real Madrid going to play? How are they going to set their attacks? They're going to set them with fast breaks and counter attacks. That's how they're going to score their goals. And arguably they've got the sort of an attacking trio that is among the best at doing that in the world in Vinicius Junior, Rodrigo,
100%.
Jude Bellingham. 100%. So I just this is such a dangerous sort of match scenario for Man City, considering those numbers. And people have argued that Kyle Walker is back, and that's obviously going to help with like recovery pace. But he has started in games this season where City have still been hurt on the counter attack. I mean, the two games against Chelsea, he started both games, and I think that over the two games it was 5-5 in the end. Chelsea managed to score 5 goals against them. They counter attacked brilliantly, and Raheem Sterling, who Walker was supposed to be marking that day, scored in both of those games. So where he Walker was actually quite slow on the turn dealing with Sterling, which sort I'm not going to say Kyle Walker's absolutely finished at the game like Casemiro, but I do think he is regressing slightly in one-on-one situations, and he is an unbelievable athlete and will be able to deal with Vinicius Junior for pace. But I just think if he can get him one-on-one inside the box, I do think there's a vulnerability there. And that also was seen in Newcastle's game with Manchester City earlier this season when Anthony Gordon gave Walker a torrid time cutting in off the left onto the right. Again, Gordon scored in that game as well. And Newcastle created lots of moments on the counter-attack that game. So I'm not too worried about Walker being back as much as maybe the market is expecting. Although Emmett made a great case, didn't he, about Raul's rubbish sort of away numbers. But this is just a team that defy all logic and metrics in the Champions League. They sort of have a sort of indescribable way of just staying in the game and staying calm under pressure. And I don't really like trusting my gut too much in betting. I do like to let the numbers speak. But I do think when you've got a team like Real Madrid who are just tooled up to the max to absolutely just flourish on the counter-attack here against City's weaknesses, that 5-2 does really stand out. And I do think you've got to consider Vinicius Junior to score at any time as well, 11-4. And the 22-1 for him to score twice as well surely has to be of interest. I mean, he had 3 really decent chances in the first leg. And he's the man that Real are going to hit with their counter-attacks. And he'll be on the end of those transitions that end in the City box. So, yeah. Combining Real to qualify and Vinicius Junior to score comes out at 13-2. So again, that's an angle I'll definitely be back in. If I'm going to have a bet on Real to qualify, I do think Vinicius Junior is the most likely to get in on the act. So it makes sense to combine them two. But I'm not going to stop there either. I'm going to add Man City's card line into the mix as well. So over 1.5 cards looks big to me as well. I think it's around 4-7, which you could definitely throw into that bet builder mix just with the amount of quality and trickery in the Real Madrid front line. So Camavinga is the third most fouled player in La Liga this season. Bellingham is the 6th most fouled player in La Liga. And Vinicius Junior has won the 2nd most fouls in the Champions League across the last 2 seasons. But they not only draw fouls, they also draw cards as well. So ran some numbers from since the start of last season in La Liga. And Vinicius Junior gets a player booked every 150 minutes of action, which is quite a remarkable number. That's 29 cards he's drawn off the opposition since the start of last season. And Camavinga gets on booked every 198 minutes, drawing 17 cards since last season. And this season, Bellingham sort of following that suit as well. He gets on booked every 198 minutes. So he's drawn 10 cards from the opposition. And Rodrigo's also won every 340 minutes. So that sort of attacking foursome are really going to cause City some problems in terms of when they're defending those counter-attacks. So I just think with such sort of jeopardy at play and the counter-attacking threat, which can lead to cynical fouls, which could sort of ramp up the frustration levels on City's part. I think the City card line is also a bet to throw into that Vinicius Junior and Real Madrid to qualify mix. So if you back Real to qualify, Vinicius Junior to score, and over 1.5 cards for City, actually comes out at 12-1. And I think you can back those in singles, obviously, which is probably the more sensible way of doing things. But with all those variables sort of linked together, if one's going to happen, I think maybe two or three of them could as well. So I do think that 12-1 is definitely worth considering.
It was already going to be an exciting game. I'm even more excited now with the potential of some of those tips. If you want to be notified, by the way, every time a new episode of Football Only Better goes live, make sure you follow wherever you get your podcast. And for the YouTube version, make sure you like and subscribe to Betfair's new channel for non-racing content. Dortmund's whole season rests on their home game against Atletico Madrid. They were dreadful for the first hour of that game at the Metropolitano, but they somehow came out with a 2-1 defeat. So they are still alive in this tie. But Emmett, they're going to have to play a hell of a lot better. I know this doesn't seem mega scientific, what I'm about to say here, but do you feel like the first goal is utterly crucial to this? Because I think if they get the crowd involved, Dortmund, if they get that first goal, wipe out the deficit, then I think they'll probably go through. If Atleti somehow score the first goal, it could turn pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think the problem with betting on Dortmund here is the as you're kind of alluding to there, is their capability of blowing themselves up. Like, I think the both goals last week were really kind of self-inflicted wounds.
Oh, if you'd heard wah, 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 nah, 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 in the background, it would have fitted perfectly, because Hummels' 500th appearance for Dortmund, yeah, and Schlotterbeck basically getting in each other's way to defend a throw-in, one of the stupidest things I've ever seen in Champions League football.
Yeah, again, those Dortmund defenders, not friends, Thunder's backers there last week was pretty disappointing. but anyway, we'll move on from that. But it was, again, it felt like, really unfortunately for Atletico Madrid fans, I think classic Diego Simeone, in that, like, that tie was up potentially over 2-0 if they'd really gone for the throat, but by sitting back and kind of conceding the game, they kind of left it open to chance. It was also interesting that Sebastian Haller, who anyone who watched the African Nations Cup will know, like, made a massive, massive impact on Ivory Coast. Like, they were kind of, like, they were a fairly hopeless team in the group stages, and their transformation from kind of team on the verge of getting knocked out to winning the tournament was mainly built on him, I would say, in his kind of efforts as a substitute, and then kind of when he was starting in the kind of very latter stages. And Dortmund's kind of starting striker this season, Niklas Füllkrug, is kind of not really a Champions League level striker. And it was just even interesting with the Haller kind of had a really kind of improved Dortmund when he came on last week, so I'll be interested to see if he starts this week.
I think, well, he got kind of crunched. I must admit, I don't know how badly he was injured, but he got crunched like 3 minutes into the game at Gladbach on Saturday, and he had to go off. So he made his first start for ages.
Yeah,
got crunched by Nico Elvedi and had to go off like in the 10th minute. But I genuinely, at this stage, I'm not quite sure whether he's fit enough to come back. But it was a real shame for him. I mean, he looks absolutely crushed, bless him. He's had such a nightmare time of it.
Yeah, it's, as well, in this game, it's a real centre-forwards game, in the sense that, because the way Atletico play as well, like, Atletico are 12th in La Liga for shots conceded. They're also in the bottom half in terms of corners conceded as well. So that just kind of reflects the way they play. It's a reactive style of play where they're kind of sitting deep, kind of allowing a lot of shots, allowing the opposition to have territory, but kind of trying to defend their box really well. So kind of in those really tight spaces where you have to operate, kind of, can the centre forward be clinical? Can he find a little bit of space? Can he kind of, in the one or two chances he gets, make the difference? So I do think if Haller didn't play, I think it'll be a really big game for Füllkrug and the kind of Dortmund forwards. Can they be clinical? I'd be reluctant to bet on that, to be honest, and I'd be reluctant to take Atletico, given their struggles away from home. So the angle I like for this game is kind of What I mentioned there, I was just looking at kind of, I think the way this game will go, it's very likely we'll have Dortmund on the front foot because I can't see, it's very unlikely. I feel that Dortmund will keep a clean sheet against Morata, Griezmann, and just the way Dortmund played, and the nature they're poor defensively, they're not to be trusted. So if they were to concede one goal, that means they need to score two to at least take it extra time. So I think the kind of game script of the way this game will shape will likely be Dortmund pushing forward for most the game, Atletico sitting back. So I was looking at either Dortmund team shots or Dortmund team corners, and the one I'll go for is Dortmund over 6.5 corner at evens. I think I can see them racking up the corners against Atletico sitting deep.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. Mark, how do you see this one going? Because Atletico, we've known all the way through the season, really, at the Metropolitano, brilliant. Away from home, terrible a lot of the time.
Very similar lines to Emmet, really. They look like rabbit in the headlights, really, for that first half hour at least in Madrid. And
They're
whether it
so
was.
annoying. They're honestly, because obviously, as somebody who covers the Bundesliga a lot, I've got a soft spot for Dortmund. I want German teams to do well. And I've seen them play so well in the Champions League at times this season. And that first hour was just like, oh, come on, man. So bad.
But let's swing it around and be positive. Edin Terzic has been after the Madrid game and still is looking forward to the second leg, whether it's tactical from Atletico, complacency, bit of fatigue, maybe a bit of all three, really. But in the second half, they were looking jaded and did start to look a bit fragile. And Haller's introduction obviously helped. But, he scored the goal, but they still hit the woodwork twice after that consolation strike. So they could easily have drawn that game, or even more, really. So they'll be feeling good about themselves. I know Terzic is very enthusiastic. Dortmund's record at home in the Champions League is very strong, just one defeat in 17 Champions League matches now, and they're unbeaten at home in the Champions League since November 2021. Even Man City failed to win here. So the Dortmund draw no bet angle has been gobbled up by the market in the last 24 hours, unfortunately. But you can see why, as you've discussed already, Kev. The Atleti's away record, sketchy at best. Five wins on their travels in La Liga from 15, just one in four in Europe this season. If you look at the Champions League record away from home, 15 defeats in the last 30 away games, 50% loss rate, that's pretty poor. Six clean sheets in that sample of 30 games as well, and just one in the last 13 away in this competition. So, yeah, it's very difficult to put your finger on why they've been struggling so much in La Liga this season, but certainly they can't be trusted going into this game for me. So I think it's a difficult game. I think you're absolutely right. The first goal could be crucial. So I'm quite happy to sort of take myself out of the equation of the match odds and the Asian handicap, etc., and look elsewhere. So I've also got a Dortmund corners based selection, but I'm going to package it together with something else. So I've got Dortmund over 4.5 corners as the first leg of a two-leg bet builder. Dortmund are averaging 5.5 corners at home in the competition this season. They forced eight in Madrid last week, and Atletico lost the corner count 11-5 at Lazio, 9-4 at Feyenoord, 3-2 at Inter, and could only draw 4-4 on corners against Celtic, and they give up an average of five in La Liga. So you could even back Dortmund to win the corner count as well if you like to boost it a bit further. But the main play I like here is Dortmund's left back, or he's a bit more of a left wing back, Ian Mattison, to commit at least one foul. Now I'm not going to put him quite in the Theo Hernandez category, but he's not as headless and brainless as Hernandez, but he will get up and down that flank quite often. He does provide a lot of quality on the ball. He's very energetic in and out of possession, likes to get stuck in too. He's one of those players, I believe, that when the ball's being sort of on the way out and he's jockeying a player, he just can't help himself by pushing that player over and committing a foul unnecessarily. Still lacks a
Could have
bit of
got sent off
experience.
actually on Saturday. He went in for a really early challenge and he was lucky that he got a tickle on the ball because he got booked. And if he hadn't got the ball, I think he goes. So, yeah, I agree with you completely. I like him a lot, but he's just got that raw edge still where he just does odd things and he can't resist. I mean, look at the first leg. I mean, who plays a ball across their own area? I know Coble played him into trouble a bit, but why would you go that way across your own area instead of turning out the other way? So yeah, there are he's a young player, so he's still learning the game. So yeah, I think you're right.
Exactly. So he joined Dortmund in January. He started 16 games for Dortmund across all comps. He's committed at least one foul in 13 of those. He's around 4-9, I think, for a repeat in this match. And I do like that as a kind of single to add to your bet builder. So, you know, Molina, Llorente, down that channel, Griezmann will drift as well. You know, all three of them are pretty useful at drawing fouls, and Mattison doesn't normally need too much encouragement. So just combine the two and you're getting close to 9-10.
Yeah, Lewis, it's funny with Atletico, isn't it? Because we always think of Diego Simeone and your reflexes always are, they'll be, you know, really compact and really tough to break down. But to use one of Pep Guardiola's famous phrases, I think they are get at-able.
Yes, absolutely, Kev. Yeah, that's the perfect phrase. A classic Pepinism, is that a word?
Oh,
Pepinism.
Pepinism. Yeah.
We've got all these terms on the terms flying out on the podcast today. Yeah, and I was blogging the Atletico Madrid first leg actually against Dortmund. I'm just going to add to the crap football cliches that you guys have already mentioned about first goal is crucial, etc. by saying it was a game of two halves, you could say.
Yes.
Yeah, no, Dortmund played the first 15 minutes, didn't they? Like a sort of kickabout in Hackney Marshes, I thought. It was, yeah,
So
obviously,
bizarre. So weird.
I can sense the disappointment in your voice regarding their performance on the sort of the big stage like that. So yeah, I can totally get that. And the Atletico didn't really allow Dortmund anything in the first, I'd say, 30 minutes or so. So when I was doing the live blog, I had the sort of the touches in the box stat running alongside, and by the 32nd minute, Atleti had 23 in Dortmund's box, and Dortmund had 0 in Atleti's box, which is crazy for a game which was supposed to be quite a I think it was nearly priced up as being pick'em really on the qualification to qualify situation. You'd normally see those stats when, say, Manchester City are playing Luton or something like that. So it was a terrible start from Dortmund, but they did improve in the second half, didn't they? But I still didn't think they didn't really trouble Oblak until sort of final 10 minutes or so. And they actually
Yeah.
were quite fortunate that the goalkeeper rescued them. I think it was on about 75 minutes when, was it Lino,
Oh, massive save.
yeah,
Massive
the
save from
back post.
Lino. Yeah,
That goes in, the game's
huge.
over, isn't it, really? I think so. The tie's over. So yeah, that Haller goal came at a really good time because it came out of nothing, and they got the goal, and they sort of grew in those final 10 minutes, and they actually could have nicked the draw, couldn't they? I mean, Brandt's header coming off the woodwork late on really was an exciting finish. But I think this is set
Yeah.
up to be a really close game actually again, and I totally see the home advantage for Dortmund being a really big factor in the outcome. But I do think that's going to be sort of cancelled out by the genius that is Griezmann. Really, I think any game that he's involved in, you have to give that team a huge chance, even in a really tough away day like at Dortmund. His assist for the goal, again for Lino, was just like pure silk, wasn't it? It was
I'll
such a
be
lovely
so
little
good.
flick. Yeah, he
He's
just wrapped.
ridiculously good.
Yeah, I think he'd actually get in my World 11 at the moment. If I was picking a World 11, I think Griezmann would probably be
Yeah.
in there in that pocket. So yeah, he ran the show actually, I thought, in the game again. Just I think he created six chances in the match, and that was including the assist. And that's the most chances he's actually ever created in a Champions League game. I read a stat from Opta. So yeah, that was it was great to see. Just like a fine wine, isn't he? Really, he's just getting better and better, and he's actually got seven Champions League goal involvements this season now for Atletico. So 5 goals and 2 assists. So if Atletico still stay in, if they can get through this tie, he might be a runner actually in the top goal scorer market because he's on 5. So he could be a threat to our Phil Foden bet. And he's just someone that drags Simeone's men through games, isn't he? He's, yeah,
Well, I mean, they
I
don't beat Inter without him. It's as simple as that.
absolutely,
And he was on
absolutely.
one leg, effectively, in that game. And yet he still managed to drag them through. He was Herculean in that game.
Yeah, that's the perfect term. And this is why I think I've got to keep a Atletico angle onside in this game. But I just think it's a case of, if it looks like it's going to penalties, smells like it's going to penalties, feels like it's going to penalties, then probably it's going to penalties. And I really like the prices actually surrounding the fact of it going to extra time and penalties. And Dortmund winning by one goal is 11-4, which gets you probably the two most likely winning scores on your side in 1-0 and 2-1. And obviously that would take the game to extra time. So I do think if you fancy Dortmund to win the game by one goal, I do think you might as well be a bit greedy and turn that 11-4 shot into a 6-1 shot and just back the game to go to penalties. And I do think that jump is too big from 11-4 to 6-1, purely on the basis that you only really need to get through an extra 30 minutes of probably what will be quite a predicted sort of tight, cagey stalemate. I don't have the numbers, obviously, but I've watched so many knockout football games in my lifetime, and it does feel that extra time does sort of pass with both teams not really wanting to take risks or are quite heavily fatigued. So the game in extra time does always feel like it can drift. So I always would rather just back the game to go to penalties, just in a game where there's a knockout situation, rather than just back the draw. And I do think actually penalties would, I think both teams would shake hands actually on a penalty shootout to seal their fate with such sort of high stakes involved. So, and then seeing sort of Oblak versus Coble in the penalty shootout would be quite fun, I think, as well.
That'd be great.
It would.
Good.
So I can definitely see a situation where the game ends with a one goal victory for Dortmund, and then that 6-1 shot looks like a huge runner. So yeah, I'll be cheering on penalties in this one, Kev.
Lovely stuff. Barcelona PSG. Battle between Xavi and Luis Enrique, know each other very well. I think Xavi won that first leg by quite some distance, actually. Mark, it was a weird game because Barcelona led, Harris took it to 2-1, then fell apart and Barca won it 3-2. But I got the sense watching that game that Barcelona were a threat all the way through, Harris only in fits and starts. I know they're both flawed, but it did seem to me that Barcelona were the more cohesive unit in that first leg.
I wouldn't disagree with that. I think it was only really that 15-20 minute spell after half time when PSG did sort of dominate the game for a little period. They obviously scored twice as well, and it looked the game looked to be there for the taking for them. But then Pedri comes on and Pedri does Pedri things, and the game turns again. There was plenty of twists and turns, but yeah, I think Barca just about edged it. Very absorbing game, very entertaining game. And this fixture has got a history of goals, but I'm hopeful we're going to get to see something similar on Tuesday night. Barca in the driving seat, of course. But I think from a PSG perspective, a trip to the Olympic Stadium is far less intimidating than the Camp Nou. So they can't be dismissed in this game. Even if I was disappointed in their performance last week, a little bit disappointed in the team shape and the setup and the approach from Luis Enrique too. And Mbappe sort of playing through the middle for the most part felt a little bit wasted at times. He was restricted to just three shots, none of which were on target. Had the fewest touches of an outfield player for PSG to play the full 90 as well. But it's not often he has two sort of quiet games like that in the big matches that matter. So I'd expect a response, and I expect a tactical shift from PSG here with Hakimi back from suspension. He'll slot in at right back. It means Marquinhos can go back to centre half. And I think they're going to make some amendments to their midfield too. I mean, Asensio was anonymous. He won't be playing. I think Kang will probably miss out as well.
Team selection was weird, right? It was just really weird. Like Asensio was kind of played as a false nine for a bit. That didn't work. It was just, it's a classic Luis Enrique kind of, I'm going to do this. Don't do that. It's really silly. No, I'm going to do it anyway.
He's done a Pep now a couple of times in the Champions League this season, and it's been difficult to try and understand what he's trying
Newcastle
to achieve.
Away. What disaster that was.
That was the obvious one. But Zaire Emery should be starting here, I think, and possibly Barcola too. But either way, I think PSG will see a better side of them. And I think Hakimi especially just gives them so much more thrust down the right-hand side, and also the recovery pace to potentially deal with Barca if they do start to play a bit more direct, because that's how they had a lot of joy in that match, actually, was playing direct over to Rafinha's side. And yeah, PSG have had a weekend off as well, so they should be well prepared too. And I think from a Barca perspective, it all went pretty well last week, but two suspensions to Christiansen and Sergio Roberto means they're going to have to rejig that midfield. Now, players are back fit and available, but it sounds like De Jong and Gundogan are going to play in a bit more withdrawn midfield pivot role, with Pedri playing just in front, because Pedri's not quite fit enough to get box to box yet. So they're going to have to sort of sacrifice Gundogan and his ability to get forward and attack to just be a bit more assured there in midfield, which is something to watch potentially in the fouls and tackles markets. But getting back to the issue at hand, I think goals, I mean, it's difficult to sort of dismiss goals between these two teams. 11 of their last 13 Champions League meetings have seen both sides score an average of 377. Appreciate a lot of those matches came under different regimes, but Barca have impressed defensively this season, especially at home. But I think, you know, it's very difficult to deny PSG a goal. They've only drawn a blank twice this season, and obviously they're chasing the tie too. So this will be interesting, I think. But defensively, I'm sure Emmett will probably bring this up, so sorry to steal your thunder if you are. Defensively, PSG in Ligue 1 have been absolutely hopeless away from home. They are fourth worst in terms of their expected goals against figure, 1.73 per game, which is quite astonishing, really. really, considering their superpower in that division. And in the Champions League, both teams have scored in every away game so far for PSG. So I'm going to back both teams to score and top it up by backing over 3.5 cards to give us a 5-6 shot. Istvan Kovacs is the referee, the Romanian. He's quite a hard taskmaster. Averages close to 5 cards per game in the Champions League, excluding qualifiers. And this season, he's given at least 4 in 4 of his 5 Champions League ties. And he did the Inter Atletico first leg and brandished 6 cards that day. So, you know, when required, he is quite reliable to get them out. So, yeah, 4 cards or more and both teams to score.
Emmett, do you have any thunder left? It's pesky O'Hare nicked it all.
Yeah, not.
Joys are going first. Sorry, Emmett.
Exactly. It's I think this is really interesting. I think that Barcelona are actually now about to win the Champions League. I think they're an 8.0 on the exchange. I think the vulnerability of the English teams is big. I think obviously, just to kind of clarify, the main reason for this is if Barcelona get through here against PSG, which I expect them to, they'll have Atletico or Dortmund in the semi-finals. I'm pretty confident they can beat both of those teams. They'd be decent favourites, maybe, I don't know, 166 maybe against Atletico to qualify, something in and around there.
They just won their 3-0, didn't they?
Exactly. That was, to be fair, after the, I think, the 120 minutes extra time. But even still, I'd be confident that Barcelona could take that tie against Dortmund. I think Barcelona is a different level team from Dortmund, and I'd expect them to come through that. I kind of mentioned this last week that like Barcelona have a similar profile to Inter last season in that their expected goals and their kind of underlying numbers are kind of much better than their league form suggests. They have better expected goals numbers in the league than Real Madrid, and they've kind of, because the only way Barcelona were going to find their way out of this kind of financial mess they put themselves in was by La Masia producing a handful of gems. And wouldn't you know, La Masia is starting to produce a handful of gems in terms of, as you mentioned, they have children playing very successfully in Lamine Yamal and Kubarsi at centre half.
How good does he look, by the way? He's unbelievably good.
Yeah, and as well, I think if you're a real football fan as well, like it was a beautiful thing to see Pedri come on and put that pass he did last week. I think, and from a betting point of view, I just think Barcelona are stronger than last week. I know Christensen's out, and that's not ideal, but having they kind of went into that game with De Jong just coming back from injury, and De Jong has a bit of match practice. I think like Pedri, Gundogan, and De Jong is a very strong midfield three. And if you compare that to, say, the likes of Sergio Roberto, they've been lining out Christensen in a converted centre half. So I think Barcelona are stronger. And even Lewandowski, who's played in fits and starts this season, thought some of his link-up play was very strong. He was coming deep and he was being that kind of pivot to counter-attacks, which I think is kind of the secret sauce for strikers. We saw a bit from Ollie Watkins yesterday as well. I think Barcelona are really playing extremely well. As Mark said, you can't, like, one thing we can rely on is kind of PSG's defensive vulnerability. Like, they're defending at set pieces for Barcelona's winner last week was very poor. It was very noticeable. Listeners might remember early in the game, Ter Stegen just had a long punt down the field and Rafinha nearly scored from it.
So it was unbelievable. It was like a National League South.
100%. Like, here's the tactical plan. You just boot it long and we'll get a big chance off it. So I think we can rely on Barcelona getting a lot of chances this week, and hopefully they can convert enough of them. The goal expectancy is so high. I can see this being maybe a high scoring draw. So the better play, I think, is back Barcelona to reach the final. You can look at maybe trading out once they get there, depending on opposition. But I think Barcelona have a really strong chance of making the final now.
And yes, I know there's probably really good sides in National League South. Stop shouting at me. Anyway, let's move on to the Europa League briefly. West Ham against Leverkusen. Lewis, I know you want to look at this one. Leverkusen won the league at the weekend, and Xabi Alonso, for the big game that could have won them the league, made 7 changes and left out Alex Grimaldo, Jeremy Frimpong, Florian Wirtz, who came on at halftime anyway and got a hat-trick. And he's clearly had an eye on this second leg, because having won the league, they're going to play second-tier opposition in the final of the Pokal. This is the one that really they should now prioritise between now and the end of the season.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And I do think this might be a bit of a stroll in the Olympic Park for Leverkusen, just by the way that they prioritised this game. And I don't think that the great celebrations that we saw when they won the league on the weekend will come into play at all. I think Xabi Alonso's far too shrewd for that, to let that affect any plans for the game. So yeah, I think that second goal actually in that first leg was a real hammer blow for David Moyes' men, wasn't it? I think that probably puts them
See what
out
you
of
did there. Very good. Very good.
And I think just clearly Leverkusen are the far superior side than West Ham really here. But anyway, but then you're taking Lucas Paqueta and Jared Bowen out of the side for West Ham, and that becomes what I would define as a huge mismatch actually, and one that isn't really being factored into the prices available. So Paqueta is suspended, surprise, surprise, and Bowen has been desperately trying to get himself fit for this game after a knee issue, but the early signs are that he probably won't be risked now, just with a West Ham still trying to fight to get into Europe in a Premier League, and also his European place, the Euro Championships up for grabs still for England. So I don't, the early signs are that he won't be risked either. So without those two, I'd argue that West Ham are actually Premier League relegation candidates that are playing in a Europa League quarterfinal against the best team in Germany. So there's no real evidence to suggest how much they'll miss Paqueta and Bowen, because Bowen's normally quite reliable and plays a lot. Paqueta has played a lot as well. So, but they've been without both of them for two matches in the last two seasons, and they lost 2-0 at Brentford in the Premier League and were knocked out of the Carabao Cup at Bla against Blackburn at home. So Paqueta is such a massive player for West Ham, and I think I've mentioned these numbers before to back that up. So with him and the team, so that's 53 games. West Ham averaged 1.6 goals per game with him, and in 18 games without him, they averaged 0.6. So that's a whole that's
Bloody
one
hell.
goal. Yeah, that's one goal responsible. Paqueta's influences is on this West Ham team. So in a low scoring sport like football, that's just
That is an
absolute.
enormous drop, isn't it? A
From a
whole
big
goal
sample
per
size as
game.
well, 18 games they've played without him, so and 53 with him. So the sample size is something we can sort of take a lot of weight from as well. So, and if you take Bowen out of the equation as well, then I'm struggling to see how West Ham can score actually in this game against one of the best defenses in Europe. So Leverkusen have conceded just 19 goals all season, so that's 0.65 per game. They faced the fewer shots on target, kept the most clean sheets, 15. So I just see this as a huge mismatch in a game that Leverkusen are going to be taking really, really seriously. And David Moyes actually said after the game in Germany, "Let's try and get one and then see if we can get two." Well, I think they'll get zero here. So
Jesus, there's a strategy, isn't it?
the prices available West Ham not to score or under 0.5 West Ham goals is 2-1. So a Bayer Leverkusen clean sheet is 2-1, which I just think is begging to be snapped up. And I would just wait to see if Bowen makes it or not. But the early signs are that he won't be available. So if there's no obviously gonna be no Paqueta, and if there's no Bowen on the team sheet, and that price is still 2-1 for West Ham not to score, I do think that's a huge runner, because if Leverkusen get in front, then this game is just going to drift big style, because I think the home fans will. Exit en
Leave?
masse, won't they? They'll exit en
Yeah.
masse and the game will just drift and it'll be a bit of a procession for Leverkusen. So yeah, the West Ham not to score in the game at 2-1 really stood out to me.
That's all we have time for on this edition of Football Only Better. Please do remember to gamble responsibly. Remember, we've got our usual weekend previews later in the week. All of our shows on our non-racing channel on YouTube, so make sure you like and subscribe. And we've got loads of good European coverage on our website, betting.betfair.com. From Mark, from Emmett, from Lewis, and from me, it's goodbye for now.